Throughout the month, there's a really busy time of harvest festivals, Thanksgiving services, and travelling fairs. But the month, of course, is most associated with the period around Halloween.
It's a funky night tonight! It's a funky night tonight! E-I-D-D-I's funky night tonight!
On the last Thursday in October, close to Halloween, of course, but less known, in the villages of Hinton St George and Lopen in Somerset, they process their punkies around the village.
Give us a candle, give us a light, it's punky night tonight.
The punky is made from a mangel wurzel, similar to Halloween pumpkin, but much harder to cut. Here they have intricate flower shapes, animal patterns, and elaborate designs cut into the outer skin. It's very important to leave a thin membrane intact so that the lighted candle placed inside illuminates the designs. It's frequently assumed that the trick-or-treat tradition is an import from America, whereas, in fact, it's a two-way trip. The original guising activities of the Irish and Scots were taken over to America, and they've simply returned in another form.
It's a funky night tonight! It's a funky night tonight! E-I-D-D-I's funky night tonight!
Here in Hinton St George, this is a house-visiting custom, a kind of trick-or-treat without the tricks. And a punky king and queen are crowned. Prizes are given for the best designs. And money is raised for charity.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The other autumn ritual that we're all aware of is November the 5th. At least in England, it's the annual celebration of the deliverance from the plot to blow up the King, the House of Lords and the House of Commons this day in 1605. So Guy Fawkes Day, or Bonfire Night, is a date still observed throughout England. And even today, the cellars below the Palace of Westminster are still subjected to a ritual search on the eve before the opening of Parliament. One very different event is Bonfire Night at Lewes in East Sussex. Since at least the early 19th century, celebrations have been organised by various bonfire societies. There are five in the town: Cliff, Borough, Commercial Square, South Street and Waterloo. These societies organise fancy dress competitions for the children. They race tar barrels along the street and they visit the War Memorial during the evening of November the 5th.
But we will celebrate in a spirit of remembrance and reflection the events of 400 years, and especially the 11th of September.
Not only are the dead of the two world wars remembered, but the Lewes martyrs, 17 local Protestants who were burnt in the High Street in the 1550s during the Catholic backlash of Queen Mary's reign.
So stand up, take hold of the cliff, and recite the bonfire prayers, taking your time from me. Remember, remember.
Many of the towns in Sussex have bonfire societies and they also come to join in the Grand United Parade. This is the high spot for the visitor to the town, as most of the societies combine to provide a huge torch-lit, costumed, banner-carrying, band-playing procession. During the 19th century, mass street celebrations came under increasing fire from sections of the local establishment. Lewes continues to attract controversy, in particular using the event to comment on political and social issues of the day in the form of effigies of unpopular figures.
Our country has had to deal with terrorists, dictators, such as Guy Fawkes, Napoleon, the Kaiser, Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
Terrorists of both sides. And now, Osama bin Laden. With others like Saddam Hussein and Milosevic, the Hitler have always dealt with them so perfectly well.
Bin Laden, Hitler, Bart Simpson, Maggie Thatcher, they've all been treated to the same fate.
What shall we do with him?
Real hardliners in the struggle to uphold tradition, despite much criticism, are the Cliff Bonfire Society. They still carry the traditional No Popery banner, along with 17 fiery crosses to represent the Lewis martyrs. They're still addressed by mock bishops, and they burn not only effigies of Guy Fawkes, but the Pope as well. So my brief excursion into the Rites of Autumn is coming to a close. I've no time to talk of the Soul Cakers of Cheshire, Mischief Night, Caking Meat, the remarkable Tar Barrel Rollers of Ottery St Mary, and Turning the Devil's Boulder. The range of celebration is extraordinary. They may not be the same as 200 years or 10 years ago. They could simply be a sense of solidarity and continuity of communal life, or a release from humdrum lives. They certainly can show a link across several generations, and that social interaction should not be undervalued. To end where I began, I once asked the Bartle carrier at West Witten why they do it. His response was simply, "Because we do."
The Shouter and the villagers of West Witten in North Yorkshire, Burning Bartle. The Rite of Autumn was presented by Doc Rowe, and the illustrations came mostly from his vast archive. 20 Minutes was produced by Julian May. Well, a very warm welcome back to the Royal Albert Hall from me, Susie Klein, and a prom given tonight by the Orchestre National de France under their music director, Daniele Gatti. We've already had two pieces of brazen French modernism this evening from Claude Debussy, but if Debussy introduced strange new sounds into the world by stealth, our next composer dragged the musical world kicking and screaming into the 20th century. Igor Stravinsky was one of Paris's most celebrated adopted sons, the man who penned radical new scores for the stage, pieces like Petrushka, the Firebird, full of colour and rampaging energy. But it was his ballet, The Rite of Spring, that made him a huge celebrity. The piece caused the most famous riot in musical history on its opening night. That was Paris, 29th of May, 1913. The audience at the brand new Théâtre des Champs-Élysées had been treated already to the ballet Les Sylphides, set to the music of Chopin. Stravinsky's new piece was to follow, and it sounded promising enough, a ballet based on the most pleasant and optimistic of seasons, spring. Lulled into a state of happy relaxation, many of the audience members failed to pick up the clue from the new work's subtitle, Scenes from Pagan Russia. Instead of happy idylls, peasant girls and shepherds, the ballet opened with a strangely dark, haunting bassoon playing unnervingly higher than sounded altogether natural. What followed was a 30-minute assault on the ears, a half hour of relentless barbarism and pagan ritual sacrifice. The music was jarring, dissonant, difficult. Meanwhile, as the huge percussion section hammered out primitive rhythms, Nijinsky danced provocatively on stage. For tonight's conductor, Daniele Gatti, this music still has all the raw power it had at that very first performance.
We are playing usually in the Théâtre des Champs-Élysées, and we did twice the Rite of Spring at that theatre, where in 1913 had the world premiere, and the theater remained absolutely the same as it was. You can imagine the emotion to play this music in the same venue. It's still amazing to me how it sounds so modern, out of the time. Nothing is preceding the piece and nothing is continuous. It's just a masterpiece there in the paradise of the music, and there is no relation before and after him.
Well, Daniele Gatti has long known this score, and over the 20 years or so he's been conducting it, his approach to the rite has changed and developed.
At the moment, I'm just look for more a pure reading in terms of music rather than a theatrical approach. It's an homage of a nature, so I'd like to treat the sound as it is, probably in more primitive way, rather than to build up tensions inside. At the end, it's a dance, it's a long dance piece. I find it very interesting now to approach in the most natural way.
Daniele Gatti conducting the Orchestre National de France tonight at the Proms and Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. I had a fleeting vision, said Stravinsky. A solemn pagan rite, sage elders seated in a circle watching a young girl dance herself to death. The composer's famous description of his inspiration for the ballet, The Rite of Spring. Performed here at the Royal Albert Hall by the Orchestre National de France under their music director, Daniele Gatti. Applause there for principal bassoon Philippe Anand. Members of the brass section now come to their feet, trombones, trumpet horns. And if you think it's loud here at the Royal Albert, well, you can only imagine the din that there must have been with people screaming, I suspect, with rather less pleasure after the premiere in 1913. Large applause there for the timpanist, the percussion section, all of the orchestra now on their feet. Gertrude Stein famously said after the first performance of this piece, we could hear nothing. One literally could not, throughout the whole performance, hear the sound of music. Particularly amusing because she wasn't actually there. The event was so legendary, though, anyone who was anyone had to say that they had a seat in the auditorium that night. Certainly much stamping of feet and very polite exclamations going on here at the Royal Albert Hall. Whoops and cheers, certainly of pleasure, admiration and respect for Daniele Gatti coming back onto the stage here. Shaking many of his players warmly by the hand as he stands on the podium, very much enjoying his moment. I have to say, even after 100 years or so of modern music, 100 years or so of that piece, it still takes me by surprise every time I hear it, the sheer audacity of Stravinsky writing that, not even 30, very inexperienced young composer, and unleashing that kind of music on an unsuspecting conservative Parisian audience. It might be, and of course it is, far more accepted now as the musical language that we're all used to. But certainly it must have been like a kind of detonating a sort of musical bomb. They certainly won't let them go here at the Royal Albert Hall this evening. As Daniele Gatti returns yet again to the platform of the Royal Albert Hall, much tapping of bows from the string players, and he's back on the podium.
Thank you.
music last heard here at the Proms on the opening weekend of the 2010 season. All those many moons ago, back in July, that was the prelude to Act 3 of Wagner's Die Meistersinger von Nürnberg, performed by the Orchestre National de France, conducted by their music director Daniele Gatti, their leader tonight, Luc Herry. And that is it for this evening's Proms. I will be back here with Sean Rafferty for a little concert on Saturday night, better known as the last night of the Proms. Very much looking forward to that. But for now, from the Royal Albert Hall, it's time to hand you back to John Shea at Broadcasting House.
That was Susie Klein, and like all of the Proms, tonight's concert will be available for you to listen to again anytime you like, and indeed as often as you like, for the next 7 days. All you have to do is go to the Radio 3 website, bbc.co.uk/Radio 3, and follow the Listen Again link. Well, before Jerzy Bielochlawek and the BBC Symphony Orchestra get to the last night of the Proms on Saturday, they're in action at the Royal Albert Hall tomorrow in the first of two live Proms, a programme of music by Bruckner and Wagner, along with a world premiere by Tansy Davis. You can hear that at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. And in between the two Proms, there's a composer portrait of Tansy Davis that follows the Prom at 9:30. And looking ahead to tomorrow night's second Prom, here's Catherine Bott.
Tomorrow night, the BBC Proms celebrates a band of musicians whose fans span the generations and whose work is in a class of its own, Penguin Cafe. It's a latter-day reincarnation of the Penguin Cafe Orchestra, founded in 1972 by Simon Jeffs. Simon's son Arthur, who now leads the band, says of its music, "One description I like at the moment is that it's a kind of modern chamber folk." Join me, Catherine Bott, to hear the music for yourself as Penguin Cafe perform live in a late-night Prom on Wednesday at 10:15 here on BBC Radio 3.
And I think I gave you the wrong time just now for that composer portrait of Tansy Davis tomorrow night. It's after the first Prom, beginning at 9:15 and not 9:30, as I think I told you. Well, back to this evening on Radio 3, and in 45 minutes from now, we've more performances by some of Radio 3's New Generation Artists, a programme including the Franck Violin Sonata from Jennifer Pike. That's at 10:15, then the poet Katrina Porteous presents tonight's Radio 3 essay at 11 o'clock, and Max Reinhardt will be here with an eclectic mixture of music for your late-night listening.